Hey, welcome to Politico Tech. Today's Monday, June 17th. I'm Stephen Overly. Saying Silicon Valley is liberal is like saying Washington is just a government town. It's broadly true. There's data to back it up. But there are high-profile exceptions. And lately, liberal exceptions in Silicon Valley are on the rise, with a growing number of tech entrepreneurs, crypto enthusiasts, and venture capitalists putting their support behind Donald Trump. And they're not doing it quietly, like some conservatives in the past. They're boasting about it on social media and podcasts, and hosting the former president at pricey fundraising dinners. Now, no one expects Trump to suddenly carry San Francisco come November. And the Biden campaign has pushed back on the idea of Silicon Valley donors flocking to Trump. But these Democratic defectors are enough to worry Congressman Ro Khanna. Khanna travels all over the country, stumping for President Joe Biden. But his home district is in Northern California and covers a chunk of Silicon Valley.
I think it would be a mistake to take Silicon Valley for granted because there's such a contrarian streak there and there's such an independent streak there.
I caught up with Khanna on a quick call last week, just before he was off to votes in the House. He offered his take on what's behind this political shift and why he thinks a more pro-technology message would put Biden ahead. Here's our conversation. Well, Congressman, welcome to the Politico Tech podcast.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I want to start with your home there of Silicon Valley and how support is shaping up this election cycle. So my colleagues, for instance, out in California wrote a story recently, and the headline was Why Trump is Finding New Friends in Silicon Valley. Do you think Trump is finding new friends in Silicon Valley?
Well, the vast majority of people in Silicon Valley still support President Biden. They support him because he's helped bring semiconductor manufacturing back. I co-wrote the Chips and Science Act that has the largest investment in science since the Kennedy years. They support him because of the IRA and huge investments in clean technology, which are benefiting the Valley. They support him, as Reid Hoffman wrote, because having predictability and the rule of law is good for business. But there's no doubt that 20-25% of the Valley has flirted or supported Donald Trump, and this is different than 2020. And the reason for Trump's increase in support is a concern with Biden's policies over blockchain and cryptocurrency. It's a concern over Biden's policies on some of the wars, and in some cases, it's a contrarianism that some of these folks flirted with Dean Phillips, and then with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And finally, there is a strand that thinks DEI has gone too far in terms of censorship, and there's this element of that that is supporting Trump.
So when you take all of those factors together, I mean, how big of a change is this, do you think?
I think it's something for the Democrats to be concerned about. That's why I convened 100 tech leaders and had them with Coach Steve Kerr, of course, the Warriors icon, and Speaker Pelosi and Ron Klain. And I said, we have to, as a Democrats, be the party of innovation, the party of entrepreneurship, the party of science, the party of the future, and convey that vividly. And we also need to be the party of free speech. But we can't compromise our values. I mean, I support diversity, equity, and inclusion. Partly look at the number of Black women or Latino women we're getting funding in tech companies. We have a long way to go in terms of making Silicon Valley more inclusive. But you can support diversity, equity, and inclusion, and you can support affirmative action as I do, and still believe in free speech and open dialogue and not censoring views. So I think we've got to figure out how we are the party of entrepreneurship and also are the party that engages people who differ with us with respect.
Silicon Valley has this perception of being so liberal. Does a shift happening there signal broader problems nationally for Biden or for Democrats?
I think the challenge is when you have people in Silicon Valley, business leaders supporting Trump, and when you have people like Steve Schwarzman, who was just honored by the Ford Center supporting Trump, he's at Blackstone, and you have a swath of business leaders supporting Trump. It is sending a dangerous signal that somehow this is normal. In 2020, everyone thought Trump was not normal because he's not normal. And what these business leaders do is normalize Trump to swing voters. And that's my concern. It's less, is he losing a chunk of votes in Northern California, but is he being propped up by business leaders as a reasonable alternative? And I strongly disagree with them. I don't think he's a reasonable alternative for this country. I think he's going to do much, much damage on climate, on the Middle East, on reversing science, on making the political prosecutions. But, you know, we have to make that case, and we have to make the case that we're going to have a compelling economic vision.
You mentioned this retreat that you hosted in Napa Valley that had 100 business and tech and political leaders. When it came to the election, what was your message to them?
My message was, if you want to see the continuation of funding on clean technology, if you want to see the continuation of funding on science, if you want to see the continuation of funding for advanced manufacturing, you need to support President Biden. That Trump will repeal or try to repeal a lot of IRA. He will reverse climate. He will reverse abortion rights. He will reverse voting rights. He will reverse science funding. And many people are sympathetic to that, but they want to make sure that our party isn't becoming one that's simply bashing innovation, entrepreneurship. They're concerned that we continue to be a champion for innovation and entrepreneurship the way President Obama was.
You know, as you just said, wanted Democrats to be seen as the party of the future, the party of innovation. What does that mean in like very real terms? And do you think folks see it that way now?
I think it means understanding technology and championing entrepreneurs. You know, I, of course, as you know, have gone across the country and championed getting venture capital funding, small business funding, and technology and AI jobs across America. So on September 30th, I'm hosting a summit with Jim Clyburn, where we have Google, Apple, NVIDIA, Microsoft participating, giving kids scholarships, making investments in 18-month credentials and job creation. And I think it says for the administration and the party to welcome the participation of technology leaders, business leaders in helping reindustrialize America and helping create economic opportunity. It doesn't mean that we aren't for higher taxes. We should be. We should be, in my view, for a wealth tax. We should be for a higher tax on inheritance. It doesn't mean that we can't be for sensible social media regulation. Of course, we should be in sensible antitrust regulation. But we should not take an attitude that is just anti-technology innovation or entrepreneurship.
How do you respond then when folks, particularly in Silicon Valley, say, well, the progressive flank of the Democratic Party is anti-big tech on trade, on antitrust? You know, they see Silicon Valley not as a hub of innovation, but as sort of the cause of a lot of problems.
I said most of the tech leaders who supported both President Biden and quite a few who supported Donald Trump have supported me. And they know I'm a progressive Democrat. I co-chaired Bernie's campaign. They know I support Medicare for all and free college. They know I support a wealth tax. They know I supported Amy Klobuchar's antitrust bill. They know I support COSA, which is the Kids Online Safety Act. They know I'm for strong privacy. But they know that I also don't demonize entrepreneurship and wealth generation. And I say, okay, we need these entrepreneurs. We need these innovators. And yes, we need thoughtful, well-crafted regulation. And we need higher taxes to be able to afford deficit reduction and universal child care and universal health care in the wealthiest country in the world. But I want more of this innovation across America. And I am proud of being a representative from the most innovative place in the world, arguably the most innovative place in modern history. And so I think it is an ability to respect the contributions of the Valley while calling for progressive policy.
Well, I guess that's, you know, it seems to me like you said at an interesting cross current, because you do have progressives who are upset, for instance, with Biden over the war in Gaza or over immigration. You have some more centrist Democrats who are upset over the economy and some of these sort of perceptions of being anti-business. How do you navigate that? And I guess more importantly, how do you tell other Democrats to navigate that?
I don't think we have a challenge of issues. I think we have a challenge of communication. Politics is about persuasion. It's about making compelling arguments. It's about explaining your point of view. Let me give you an example. We could just say, well, we need to forgive student loans. Okay, but why? Well, we need in the 21st century to have the strongest economy in the world, and we need to invest in human capital, whether that's vocational education or higher education. What set us apart from Europe and the rest of the world was we were the first to get to high school well before Europe. Now we need to make sure that we are leading in college to defeat China in terms of the or staying ahead of China in terms of the economy. That is an argument. And I think too often we have just relied on bumper stickers for policy. And what made Clinton and Obama and Bernie in different ways so compelling is that they made arguments, and you have to win the argument. That's politics. So I don't think it's issues-based. It's how do the Democrats come out and win the economic argument?
And so is Trump making a better argument in some way? Or why are some of these folks, particularly in Silicon Valley, defecting, as it were, to that camp?
Well, he's got one, the advantage of being the anti-incumbent at a time where people have soured on the economy. And I know Paul Krugman writes an op-ed every other day saying, the economy is great. People should think the economy is great. But the reality is, while business cycles have recovered, the structural economy for many people feels that the American dream is slipping away, that their good jobs aren't paying as high, that they're not as stable, that prices have increased not just in terms of consumer prices and rents, but in terms of structural prices of healthcare and childcare and education. And they want a fundamental change in the economy. And we have to be the party that provides that alternative. What Trump is saying is basically, I'm a rich guy. I'm going to help you become rich. The system hasn't worked for you. I think people sense the hollowness of that. That's why he's not anywhere near Ronald Reagan or Bill Clinton or Obama numbers. But that we need to have something, a compelling alternative. I believe Obama would be winning this race 60-40.
Do you think Democrats have misunderstood or maybe taken for granted Silicon Valley in some ways?
I think it would be a mistake to take Silicon Valley for granted because there's such a contrarian streak there and there's such an independent streak there. I think that Silicon Valley, by and large, tends to be culturally left on abortion rights, on gay rights, but they also tend to really value free speech. And we've got to make sure that we're clearly the party of speech. I mean, our defending protests, for example, on college campuses is defending speech. But we need to articulate that in the context of standing up for speech. And then we need to say that we welcome entrepreneurship. We welcome innovation. We welcome job creation and wealth generation. But we want that across the country. And we want to make sure that people have a shot to build that wealth.
Let me ask a different election-related question for you. And that's, you know, in the past, we've seen a lot of criticism towards social media companies for their handling of political content, election-related content. Many of these companies are in your district and where you're from. How do you think they're doing this time around?
I think they are trying on two accounts. They're trying to not censor any viewpoint. I think that is important. They're trying to make sure that there's no foreign interference. That's important. Where they haven't done as well as all these bots. I mean, they've made it clear that you can't have AI content online, but they need to have watermarking clearly for any AI content, and they need to do a better effort of getting rid of the bots, because the bots are really, I think, what's fueling so much of the extremism and misinformation. But, you know, those things require regulation. Where the companies totally, in my view, have dropped the ball is when it comes to our kids. And I've been reading recently, I just finished Jonathan Haidt's excellent book, The Anxious Generation. And he's absolutely right that our kids are being fed all of this horrible content about eating disorders and suicidal thoughts and creating anxiety. And we need to do a better job regulating the social media platform so that there's a standard of harm for kids, so that we have better age verification. And that's why I'm supporting the Kids Online Safety Act that has 68 co-sponsors in the Senate. It's been stalled in the House at only 23 co-sponsors, but I'm hopeful it'll move.
Addressing that, regulating that, the responsibility of you and your colleagues there on the Hill, or is there more your want social media companies themselves to be doing?
Well, of course, social media companies should be doing more, but they're in competition, right? I mean, so they've got shareholders saying maximize engagement. And if you're a social media company and you're Instagram and TikTok and Snap are trying to get 11 and 12-year-olds hooked to their platforms, then you're going to compete to try to get them hooked to your platform, and no one is verifying the age that is at 13, because there's no verification requirement. So, yes, I'd like Silicon Valley companies to do more, but I'm not going to count on for-profit companies to do what is in the good of society. That's for Congress to regulate. And that's why we need to have better age verification laws. And that's why we need to have actual regulations for the standard of harm for children that are enforceable.
If you look between now and November, I'm curious what more you want to see the Biden campaign and Democrats do, particularly when it comes to appealing to your constituents there in the Valley. And then the second part is, when you look beyond November, the future of the Democratic Party, and I often see you described as, you know, the future of the Democratic Party. What does that look like beyond this election cycle?
We have to say, we see where America is headed. We see the modern economy, and here's your place in it and how you're going to succeed in it and how your family and your community is going to succeed in it. The Trump married economic nostalgia with racial nostalgia. He said life used to be better off 30 years ago and the country used to be less diverse. We need to show that the future is going to be better. And we do that by investing in every district, in reindustrialization, in new technology jobs and new AI jobs, and working with business leaders and labor leaders and government to make that possible in community after community. And I think that the president needs to have a clear vision for the future and how he's going to create those future economic jobs with business leaders in every district. He's done a lot of it with the CHIPS Act and the Inflation Reduction Act. But I say to folks, every street is named after John F. Kennedy, not Lyndon Johnson. It's not just the legislation. It's being out there with these business leaders, entrepreneurs, and community colleges and universities, and showing communities what you're going to do so that they feel part of modernity. Politics is a contest of ideas. If we're not winning, it's because we didn't do a good job explaining our ideas. Leaders are able to win the argument. That's what the Democratic Party has to do.
Well, Congressman, I know you're off to votes. Thanks for joining us here on Politico Tech.
Thank you.
After my conversation with Khanna, I reached out to the Biden campaign. An official there told me that Biden's track record on tech is strong, and the president has been touting the CHIPS and Science Act that poured billions of dollars into semiconductor manufacturing. As for competing with Trump for Silicon Valley donors, the official said Biden has raked in millions of dollars of his own, including at recent San Francisco events hosted by tech investors and business leaders. That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our managing producer is Annie Reese. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. And our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overly. See you back here tomorrow.